Hello, Fight Faithful, and welcome to a Go Home Graps! This is Sour Graps. I'm your host, Al Kowalski. Everything sucks. So, yeah, we'll make our predictions for the horror show at Ew, Dream Rules. Later. But first we'll talk about SmackDown. And how much of it sucked. What are the things that sucked the most? The things that sucked less. Could they suck more? And it'll be a fun time, hopefully, had by all. I will tell you something that didn't suck. As corny as it was, I did not hate the beginning of the show where they were like cutting to different people backstage, talking about what they were going to do that night. I thought it was actually a good way to let us know what we're in for, what we're going to be looking at over the course of the evening. Just the AJ be like, I'm going to beat Matt Riddle because he's a flash in the pan and I'm the face that runs a place or something. House that AJ Styles built, something, whatever. And then Matt Riddle, who can act better than this? So I know they told him to do it slower and dumber. But he was like, what does AJ even stand for? Arrogant jackass? Anyway, my beating him was not a fluke. And when I beat him tonight and become the Intercontinental Champion, I'm going to be the bro that runs this show. So they're really leaning into the whole stoner surfer thing, like hard. Like that's his general steez, but they're like pushing it. Like his speaking cadence was so slow tonight. Like that's not how he normally speaks. So that wasn't great. But what was great? Miz and Morrison standing backstage. Miz says, are you scared to face Braun Strowman tonight? He's like, what do you mean scared? That'd be like, are you scared to face Braun Strowman tonight? He's really big. That'd be like being scared to fight Jean-Claude Van Damme because he's awesome. Did you know that he's got a great yacht and he had an amazing party a couple of years ago at Cannes? Miz says, did you fight Jean-Claude Van Damme on a yacht? And Morrison says, don't be ridiculous. And looks at the camera and says, of course I did. And I wiped the deck with him too. I love John Morrison. I love the stuff that he does. I think he's so much better than what they're letting him do, but he is what they're asking him to do. He is knocking that shit out of the park. And he has every week going back to those ridiculous things when they still had a completely empty PC and him and Miz were like dressing up as mascots in the stands and talking to themselves. Remember that? It was like back in April. They've been so good. They've been so good. Especially Morrison. Listen, are you scared to fight Braun Strowman? No, I'm not scared. I'm freaking terrified. It's good stuff. And then Braun's like, let me tell you something. I'm going to beat you up. I'm going to beat you up because I'm going to beat up Bray Wyatt later. So first, I got to get some practice on you.
And fine. And then they have Alexa Bliss, who says she doesn't bliss and tell about who her special guest is.
We'll get to how non-special her guest is and how it shouldn't have been allowed to be that way in the first place. Then who else they talk to? Cesaro and Nakamura try to figure out when Cesaro beats Big E, what'll the stipulation be for their match in Extreme Rules? And then Big E and Kofi say the same thing, but backwards, because they're talking about how Big E's going to beat Cesaro. And then I like that it went directly from their backstage time to them doing their all people at home. I think it was all really well condensed and gave you an idea. Okay, this is what we're getting tonight. And led right into the first of those things. I thought that was all really good. I would not be opposed to them doing this every time, especially if we're going to get more of John Morrison being a lovable dope. I really want to see him fight Jean-Claude Van Damme on a yacht now. Like, WWE Studios, get on that. Like, yacht fights. Yacht fights is an amazing thing. Like, do a yacht fights thing where John Morrison has to fight a bunch of people in a tournament, and then the final boss is Jean-Claude Van Damme because it's his yacht. I just wrote a movie for you. It's better than most things you make. Joe Hulbert and Jeremy Lambert can testify to that because they're watching a lot of your shit. But yeah, so it was convoluted. I guess they were saying that they asked the WWE Universe, what should the stipulation be for the tag title match at
the Horror Show
at Extreme Rules? And apparently it was inconclusive, too close to call. Was it a tie? Because if it was a tie, just say it was a tie. Too close to call means they didn't pick the thing we wanted them to pick, so we're going to have to do this again. But I guess it's going to be either a steel cage match or a tables match. And the first thing that they do in this match is Cesaro versus Big E. Michael Cole asks Corey Graves which one should... what is a cage match favor if it was going to be a cage match? And he's like, well, obviously favors Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura, because that way in the cage, Xavier Woods can't come in there. I know he's supposedly at home with an injury, but he could be hiding under the ring right now. You never know. Okay, well, who does a tables match favor? Well, it obviously favors Cesaro and Nakamura. And then later in the match, after a commercial break, Big E hits a move on Cesaro and goes for the pin. And Corey Graves is like, oh, this would be really big because either match type favors the New Day. So which is it, Corey? I mean, do both match types favor Cesaro and Nakamura? Or do both match types favor the New Day? Because I don't think it can be both. Well, who cares? Because Cesaro wins via Nakamura chicanery. And then later, they decide to pick a tables match. Tables matches are dumb. A ladder match, you have to climb a ladder to get to get to the belts, right? And a chairs match, which also sucks, but for a different reason. It just means chairs are legal. But chairs are legal in every other kind of hardcore match. That's stupid. But at least, like, the match isn't over when you hit somebody with a chair. Just like the match isn't over, first person to set up a ladder wins. No, you still have to climb it. A tables match is dumb because the first person who goes to the table loses. And so that winds up being fluky. Now, it's smart for the challengers to pick a tables match because anything can happen, you know? Wind up just, you know, oops, I fell and the table broke. That means I lost. But they're never satisfying because the guy going through the table, it's not 1999. Like, we're not 3D-ing people through tables as a way to pop the crowd. By the way, right now, I mean, a table spot always pops the crowd, but what crowd? What crowd? There's no crowd. It's the PC kids don't count as a crowd. For God's sake, in the main event, they were barely making a peep. On Raw, they are piping in some fucking crowd noise. But they did not pipe in a decibel of crowd noise for that main event last night. Woo, doggies. Becky Lynch was the first ever women's SmackDown champion. And she lost her first reign to Alexa Bliss, who won the first time because she won via a tables match. Like, she won like a weird little sunset flip powerbomb to Becky through the table. Becky had been kicking her ass the entire night. And Alexa Bliss won. Whoops, I guess I won. That's never a... Whoops, I guess I won is never a satisfying ending to a thing, to a match. It just isn't. So this creates a great opportunity for Cesaro and Nakamura to become champions. I wouldn't mind that. I think those guys could be good together. It might create a reason later for Sami Zayn to come back and demand to Freebird the titles and they can turn on him. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. After the match, there's a little brawl. And they were setting up a table. Oh Lord, let's tease the table spot. Oh darn, Nakamura pulled Cesaro off the table, so Kofi and Big E couldn't do the spot. I guess we'll have to wait for Sunday to see that table spot. Oh gosh, you're building the anticipation as we speak. Whatever. Kayla Braxton reminds us. Hey, by the way, Kayla, you beat COVID twice. Stay safe out there. Hey, Kayla, I'm glad you're okay, La. Anyway, she reminds us of King Corbin's existence, who hasn't been around for a while. And he says that AJ Styles is going to beat Matt Riddle because Matt Riddle doesn't wear shoes or some shit. I don't know what he fucking says. But it's just basically, hey, remember King Corbin? His existence will be important later. So we want to remind you that he exists. That's what this fucking thing was. Once AJ Styles beats Matt Riddle, everyone's going to see that the bro is just a little boy. Because that's the way Corbin ends all of his promos. He says something is going to be a little something. And at the end, he kind of nods forcefully towards the person who's interviewing him. Everyone's going to see at the end of the night that the bro is just a little boy. And he backs away and leaves. That's how he ends every goddamn promo. That's what they tell him to do, and he does it. God damn it. I don't know if I brought this up on Sour Grabs. The old shows, when they used to let me review things before I got all angry at everything, there was an amazing opportunity they had to really revamp this Baron Corbin character into something really interesting, and they didn't do it. It was when he was the acting general manager, the constable, Baron Corbin. He was basically the on-screen voice of the authority, and doing basically whatever Stephanie McMahon asked him to do. Like, occasionally Stephanie would show up and she'd be a bitch, and you know, Corbin would get his marching orders, and then he'd set everything in motion. And then they showed up because there was fan backlash, and they told the biggest whopper of a lie ever. Vince and Shane and Triple H and Stephanie, we listen to you, the fans, and from now on, you are the authority. We're going to do whatever you say, which was fucking hilarious at the time and turned out to be even more hilarious when you look at it in 2 years of hindsight, a year and a half of hindsight. It's like 2018. December, January? Was it January 2019 or December of 2018 when they were like, you are the authority. We'll do whatever you say. Yeah, fucking right. No, you won't. And they didn't. And we were suckers. All of you out there who believed it, you were suckers. We were all suckers. All of us are suckers for even continuing to watch this shit. Anyway, part of their whole rehabilitation of how, you know, bad the product had been was be like, it's Baron Corbin's fault. How dare he be such a bad general manager of Raw? Bad Constable Corbin. Bad, bad Corbin. And he just fucking took it, and that was it. Like, he easily could have said, what do you mean? What are you blaming me for? I just did whatever you told me to do. You know what? Screw all of you. And then to the fans, he says, screw you too. I'm out for me, Baron Corbin, and that's it. There was an amazing time when he got first called up, where he was the lone wolf, Baron Corbin. This is back when he still had, I was going to say when he still had hair, but, you know, like, he had hair in the back of his head, but not on the top or the front. Not, didn't have hair here, which is where I'm balding, by the way. Didn't have hair here. He had lots of it, stringy, wet hair in the back. Anyway, he had a match where he was part of a six-man tag. It was him and the heel Dudley Boys against whoever. Doesn't matter. Dudley Boys get introduced first. Then he gets introduced, and he walks down, and D-Von and Bubba Ray put out fists for a fist bump. This is on an episode of Main Event that I reviewed. And he just walks right past him. Doesn't put up a hand. Doesn't even look at him. They're like, what the hell? And at one point, like, he just decides he doesn't want to get tagged. So he just gets off the apron and walks backstage. And he ran afoul of the Dudleys in this way, but he didn't want to tag with the Dudley Boys. He didn't give a shit. Like, he was in the match, and then D-Von tagged himself in, and he was like, I'm kicking everybody's ass. Fuck you guys. I'm going home. And I thought, now that's interesting. I mean, like not a tweener. Oh, gee, you know, he operates by his own rules. Very interesting. I like this guy, but I don't know if I can trust him. No. An asshole to everybody doesn't care about. Face, heel alignments, nothing. He had an opportunity to really bring that back hardcore, where he does not give a shit about any of these evil authority figures who are pulling the strings. I don't care. I don't give a shit about you guys, really. I'm out for me and me alone. And if the fans start cheering for him because he's kind of a badass in that way, you're like, no, don't cheer for me. No. You booed the hell out of me when I got here. You don't actually care about me. You just hate them more than you hate me. Well, screw you. I hate you. Like, you could do a really cool thing where, like, he could get over in that way. But instead they had him dressed like a waiter for a year, and now they're having him dressed like a king. It's mid-July. He won that shit in September. He's going to be dressing like a king for a goddamn year, maybe longer. This is what they think is going to get him over as a heel. Jesus. Moment of Bliss time with Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. And they, Jesus. They talk about the women's evolution. I'm surprised they didn't just straight up give credit to Stephanie McMahon. You know, Stephanie McMahon, history's greatest feminist. without whose benevolent largesse we would be lost entirely, adrift in a sea of foxy boxing and jello fights and wet t-shirt contests. The only thing preventing us from watching just that in the women's division is Stephanie McMahon, who invented women's wrestling 5 years ago. I don't know if you know that, but that's the narrative that they've been pushing for 5 years. Stephanie McMahon had an idea. Hey, why don't we let the women wrestle too? And Vince was like, no, I don't think so. And Stephanie McMahon said, yes, Dad, I think we should do it. And Vince said, well, I don't know. I'll think about it. He's been thinking about it ever since. Because occasionally he does, and then occasionally he doesn't. Right now, he's on a good string of letting women wrestle, but it depends. Are you a mid-card woman, or are you a championship-level woman? Because that depends on whether or not you're allowed to wrestle. Anyway, so Bliss, Alexa Bliss, decides that she wants to make predictions. She says she predicts that the LA Lakers are going to win the NBA title, if that ever actually happens, because they decided to do their little quarantine bubble in a state that has more cases daily than most fucking countries do. I want the NBA to come back, man, but good Lord, that looks just bad. Bad look. Anyway, she predicts that the Lakers will win this restarted season. Okay, fine. Then she says, I also predict Matt Riddle will win the Intercontinental title tonight. Little word to the wise. The way that fortune-telling works that allows you to make it a grift is you predict shit that will happen years in advance. At least months, like with this LA Lakers prediction. When you say, I predict Matt Riddle will win tonight, and then he doesn't, spoiler alert, it discredits all of your other predictions. I mean, if we're supposed to be taking this at face value, I don't know, really. She just predicts that Strowman's going to beat Bray Wyatt, Extreme Rules, and then her mystery guest will tear the roof off on Sunday. And Nikki Cross is like, oh, it's me. I'm your mystery guest. And this is where I don't like Nikki Cross anymore. Because I don't think her shtick works. She's bubbly and fun and over the top and everything. But she's also a complete dunce. Like, obviously, you're not the special guest. You're the co-host. Like, I don't know. I just don't think something about it doesn't work for me. It works for a lot of people. Good Lord. Everybody's over the moon about Nikki Cross right now. I don't hate her by any means. I think she's great in the ring. Her whole persona right now is just not working for me. Anyway, Sasha Banks and Bayley. And they come out and they say mean things about Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, which is just what they do. They're entertaining while they do it, but it's the only thing they do anymore. So, I don't know. If somebody does something really, really well, but you watch them do it every week, sometimes two or three times a week, it can get repetitive. Not like bad, but just like repetitive, you know? So that's what this is. They, you know, whatever. They're talking about how they basically created the women's evolution themselves. And I mean, I don't know that they created it. they had a huge hand in making it legit, though. Like a month after the you know, the women's evolution, the Divas Revolution began. A month after that was Banks and Bayley at Takeover Brooklyn, which still is, I think other people will say other things, but to me, it's unarguably the best women's match that I've ever seen. Mostly because of what represents. I mean, in ring, it's there's no superlatives like that can accurately describe it. It's off the charts, great to watch, but when you realize what it meant at the time, Becky and Sasha and Charlotte being called up and becoming a major focal point of the next 5 years of women's wrestling, Bayley staying behind in NXT to build up that next generation in NXT before moving on herself, but also the culmination of the Bayley storyline finally becoming champion, all of that, there's no comparison to me. So anyway, we built that ring you're sitting in. Us, it's all fun. You're welcome. Again, they do really well. You didn't see it all the time, though, you know. And then Bliss says, well, okay, great. Thanks for talking a lot. Here's my special guest, and it's Asuka. And there's a brawl. And then we go to the commercial. We come back, and Asuka and Nikki Cross versus Sasha Banks and Bayley. And do you remember? I mean, it feels like forever ago, but there used to be a time when if you were going to have a championship match at the pay-per-view, at the pape, as they used to call it, you would make sure that the combatants in that pay-per-view championship match didn't face each other in the weeks leading up to the match so that we'd have some anticipation of what that might be like. Gosh, I really want to see so-and-so face so-and-so. They've done a really good job of keeping them separated so we don't get a little taste of it, maybe. But I really want to see it. I feel like I've seen Bayley versus Nikki Cross, and to a lesser extent, but still a very large extent, Sasha versus Asuka a lot over the last 3.5-4 weeks. A lot. So now, even though I know Nikki and Bayley is going to be very good, and Sasha and Asuka is going to be fan-fucking-tastic, I have less need to see those matches live as they happen because I feel like I already kind of saw it. Because I feel like Sasha and Asuka traded blows a lot. They had the tag team title match on Raw. Kyrie and Asuka versus the Boston Hugs. And then they also didn't they have the Bliss and Nikki last week on SmackDown, the match didn't fucking mean anything? That I got so mad about last week? That match? So I saw Bayley versus Nikki last week. And I saw that again this week. And then 2 more days from now, I'm supposed to be like excited to see it again? No, I'm not. Even though like I know the match is going to be pretty good to great. I don't care. Like, I'll watch it. But am I like, oh, man, I gotta see it? Nope. Now, would I be if I hadn't seen it before? I don't know. But I'd be much more likely to be like that than if I had just seen it 3 fucking weeks in a row, which I feel like I have.
Anyway, this is a thing. Daniel Bryan predicted some stuff in the forest. He like shot a selfie video in the woods talking about Matt Riddle and AJ Styles match. He predicts that Riddle is going to win because Riddle is sparring backstage with Drew Gulak, which is going to give him the advantage in the eyes of Daniel Bryan. The tag match is fine. I still don't know why it exists. Like, why are you showing it to us now? Asuka and Sasha has the potential to be really, really special, but it can't be special if we've seen it. It feels like a half dozen times. I know it's not that many times. It feels like that many times in the last month. I feel like I've seen them wrestle a half dozen times as part of like tag matches, or it was Asuka versus Bayley, but Sasha was ringside, and it just feels like I've seen Sasha versus Asuka so much. Sashka. I've seen them wrestle so many times, you can put their names together and it becomes a portmanteau of shit I've seen before. Sashka matches.
Oddly enough, portmanteau is one of my favorite words because it doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, it's French, so. Sorry, Warren. French words don't make any sense. But yeah, portmanteau. It's where you put two words together like that.
Sashka!
Now you can win a game of Jeopardy with your friends. Portmanteau! Match is fine. I don't care. The match is fine, and I don't care. And just like, yeah, Bayley pins Nikki Cross. She cheats and uses the ropes for leverage. That's Bayley. Didn't Bayley do the same fucking shit to Nikki last week? Like, you're giving us the match, Bayley versus Nikki, two SmackDowns in a row, and then at Extreme Rules. Like, I don't want to make my prediction just yet, but Bayley cheats to beat Nikki, two, like, it's part of a tag match, two SmackDowns in a row. If Nikki doesn't then win the title match at Extreme Rules, then why would Nikki ever get another title shot? As much as I don't want to see Bayley lose the title. Did Bayley gain momentum? The mythical momentum, which doesn't fucking exist, for their title match on Sunday? I don't know. I hope so. I don't know.
Morrison tries to get Miz to take his place in the match with Braun. It's a little comedy sketch. It's not so bad, but it's fine. It's a fine little comedy sketch. It's just like, these guys can do much more than this. They're doing what they're asked to do very, very well. Bray Wyatt has a long meandering promo at night in a swamp about his match versus Braun Strowman. Do you know what most of us didn't miss? Long meandering swamp Billy Bray Wyatt promos. The Firefly Funhouse, which is what this is billed as, was entertaining. It was a change of pace from Bray Wyatt being like, you know what? You know what I'm going to do? Sister Abigail, she came to me in a dream and she said, ooh, Like that got old over years and years and years. And so we were like, hey, something new. The Firefly Funhouse, that's new and different and fun. They were like, this week, Firefly Funhouse. It's stuff from 4 years ago. Like, oh, good. Yeah, that wasn't great. So
Here's where we have to talk about Braun. I don't think Braun is handling this whole thing about going to the swamp to face Bray Wyatt, his old cult leader. I don't think he's handling it well, guys. I think he's turned to drugs. Because he comes out before his match with Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman calls up before his match with John Morrison. Morrison and Miz are in the ring. And Braun comes out and he gets on the mic. Decided to bring a prop for this little impression. He gets on the mic and he starts out with this. Let me give you a little piece of important information. And when somebody walks up to you and starts out the conversation with, let me give you a little piece of important information, you just turn and walk the other way. Because that person's on cocaine. And now listen, I knew a cocaine guy, a guy who did a lot of cocaine. He was always trying to give me very important pieces of information. And let me tell you, they were never important. 9 times out of 10, he never actually got around to it. He was just him talking a lot, loudly, in a circle, fast. Let me give you a little piece of important information. There comes a time when every man's got to grow up, face his fears, and I'm going to face Bray Wyatt in a swamp fight. And he just keeps going, Braun does. I will walk through the gates of hell and slap the devil in the face. I swear to God, that is a direct quote from this cocaine guy I used to know 20 years ago. I swear to God, he told me about the time that he slapped the devil in the face. I don't know who he was talking about. I don't think it was Bray Wyatt. But I was like, oh, that poor guy that you slapped in the face. I guarantee you. I almost used this guy's actual name. I don't know if he's a fan. Hi, if you are. But I'm not going to use your real name. I'm going to call you Tom, because that's not your actual name. Hey, Tom, I don't know who that guy was that you slapped, but it wasn't the devil. I will walk through the gates of hell and I will slap the devil in the face because that's the only way that I could end this by going home. And I'm going to face Bray Wyatt, who is the most indisputable manifestation of all my fears and doubts and blah, 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 all wrapped up in a human form. At one point, he just says a lot of things and spits a lot of stuff into the microphone about all the things that Bray Wyatt is. Bray Wyatt isn't those things. He's just a dude who wears a fedora and a Hawaiian shirt. He's just a guy. Is that what happened, Braun? Did he ply you with drugs? Is that why you joined his little hillbilly cult?
I have to destroy Bray Wyatt before he destroys me.
And listen. And scene. Miz and Morrison are understandably concerned throughout all of this. And then Braun comes down to the ring and he murders John Morrison. Poor John Morrison, who should be a champion at some point during this run, a singles champion during this run in WWE. But who, boy, did he get squooshed in this match? And then he does his old standing head and arm choke thing that he used to do to people back when he first debuted, when they didn't trust him to do moves. They just had him like hug a guy really hard around the neck until the guy went limp. Favorite time he did that was he did it to Randy Orton, and Randy Orton just like was tall enough that Braun didn't lift him off the ground, which is vital to the maneuver working, I think, is that like the gravity allows the choke to take hold. But Randy Orton just stood there flat footed on the mat. Didn't work out well, but he still sold for him. Anyway, they did that choke and then he did the right in the power slam and that was it. But then he gets on the mic again and he goes over to the ring ropes and goes,
"Bray Wyatt, I'll see you this Sunday at the horror show at Extreme Rules."
And he just drools snot and spit and whatever is left over in his mustache from the soup he had for lunch, just all over the microphone. It's really disgusting. And then he cackles. He drops the mic and tries to laugh as loud as he was speaking into the microphone. He just laughed at the microphone. Braun Strowman, in case you ever wanted to know what it would look like if Braun Strowman did like 10 rails of coke and came down to the ring to do a promo, that was it. There was a thing back in the 80s where everybody was worried about people being on PCP because they couldn't feel pain and they were like hopped up. It was like super cocaine, PCP, angel dust. They cite it very memorably in the first Terminator movie where they were like, how could this guy punch through my windshield if he wasn't, you know, a cyborg? And the cop's like, he's probably on PCP. Yeah, no, he's probably on PCP. Yeah, you know, he punches through your windshield, breaks every bone in his hand, shatters every bone in his hand, wouldn't feel it until the morning. Yeah, PCP. So things work. PCP. I'm a cop, so I know about these things. So it's possible that Braun was on PCP. 80s PCP, the fictional kind, other than instead of cocaine, but I don't know. All I know is that Braun before... That's Braun. And this is your Braun on drugs. Any questions? Only people who are very old like me will get that joke. But it is a fantastic joke. This is your Braun. This is your Braun on drugs. Any questions? So... Morrison valiantly refuses to be put in the neck brace after such a beating he held. So he's being dragged off by Miz, like, you know, Miz supporting his weight as they walk off. And Lacey Evans comes out. Now here's where I get to be mad about Lacey Evans. That almost was like her music, wasn't it? It's so traditional. It's so traditional. Here's where I get to be mad about Lacey Evans. Traditional. It's a tradition on Sour Graps, me being mad about Lacey Evans. So they turned her heel last week because turning her baby face last fall, I believe, late last fall, didn't make a whole lot of fucking sense considering she was as heel as they come through the summer during her feud with Becky Lynch. And all of a sudden she's like, now here's some new information about me you may not have known. I'm a mom and a former Marine. Would you like to cheer for me now? I'm not going to change anything about myself other than giving you that information. Am I a babyface now? And they valiantly tried, short of actually, you know, pulling the trigger on those title matches she was given. They never actually pulled the trigger. So now it just looks like she can't win the big one. That's good. glad they did that. And that face turn and face run was so successful, they decided to turn her back heel during a fucking karaoke showdown. That the balance between good and evil in Lacey Evans was so tenuous. It was teetering on a precipice, so precarious that her being a sore loser about a karaoke competition was enough for her to topple back over to the dark side. Yes, of course, she was just the sweetest, wonderful, most pure mom slash marine mom in existence. Which is why losing one karaoke competition was enough for her to join the forces of evil again. When she was having those matches with Becky Lynch a year ago, a lot of what she was talking about in her promos against Becky Lynch was like, you know, those Irish, they're always drunk and hot-tempered. And I was like, is her heel shtick just look up negative stereotypes about the country of origin or the race of the person she's feuding with and just bring up those negative stereotypes in a promo? Is that all it does? And I said, on the show that we were doing with Sean, I believe, at the time, I said, I hope she never has a feud with Naomi. Well, guess what? She's having a feud with Naomi. Character's always been a thinly veiled racist gimmick. Southern Belles, where they started from, was the pre-Civil War era in the South of America. What's going on in the pre-Civil War era in the South of America? It's a racist fucking gimmick. So, her having a match, a feud with super proudly black Naomi, if Lacey Evans' entire arsenal of how to be a heel is just insult the race or country of origin of the person you're feuding with, that is a recipe for fucking disaster. I am not saying that the person who is playing Lacey Evans is a racist. I'm not saying that. Certain social media posts from the past might say that, but I won't. But the character, the gimmick for the character, might slip down a slippery slope into something really awkward. Which is where we find ourselves after this week, where Lacey Evans says, because she did her karaoke shtick in high heels. Well, so did Naomi, but she was looking at, again, a social media post on Twitter. She had a video of her looking at her high heel from last week, and there were some stray hairs that had been pulled from the head of Naomi. They were still wrapped around some, you know, stud work, whatever. I don't know, women's shoes. They're like little things on the they're whatever, sequins. I don't know what the hell they are. There's something on the outside of her shoe, like little, you know, decorative shiny shit. Well, some of Naomi's hair is wrapped around those things. And so she gets a thing and she takes it and she doesn't say, hey, looks like, you know, I got some of Naomi's hairs on my shoe. She says, I found some leftover nasty on my shoe. Now, everybody likes to say, well, she calls everybody nasty, so she can't be racist. Okay, great. So she's just objectionable all around. Great. But I'm not talking about whether or not she intends it to look racist. I'm saying that you have a woman whose gimmick is racist. Whether or not she is or intends it to be, the gimmick itself is having a feud with a black woman, and she calls the black woman's hair leftover nasty. It's, remember how I was talking about like walking that fine line, teetering on the precipice? It only takes a slight nudge to go from like, this person is awful to everybody and therefore a heel to, oops, I toppled over and now I might as well be dropping N-bombs. I'm not saying she's gotten to that point yet, but we're like 5 minutes into this feud. Give it time. This could get so bad so fast. Just, if you want to doubt me, just Google the history of black women's hair and how it was used against them for years and years in systematically racist shit by white women. So, anywho, that brings us to last night's match. Lacey versus Naomi is a feud, whatever, here it goes, whatever. So we'll get back to the hair again. The match is whatever until Lacey decides to grab a hold of Naomi's hair, who's wearing it like really long and back, like in very tight braids, it looked like. She twists. And she wraps it around the ring ropes and ties a knot in it. And by the time Naomi is able to extricate herself, she turns around and gets a women's right in the face and loses the match. And this, of course, has just brought out all kinds of support for Naomi and is a hashtag that trends called Naomi deserves better. And she does. She's been in the WWE for 11 years. She's a two-time champion, should have been at least like a 5- or 6-time champion by now, because it took him fucking forever to give her first run. And then her second run happened almost immediately after that. Like, she won it back to the person she had to give it up to because she was injured. They stripped her when she was injured because she couldn't defend it in 30 days. How long has it been since Bayley has defended the fucking title? A lot longer than 30 days. So, when they did a fucking social media post with a picture of a bunch of women, you know, commemorating the 5-year anniversary of the Women's Evolution. And the bottom row is the four horsewomen. It's Sasha, Bayley, Becky, Charlotte, and Asuka on the bottom row. Top row is the Bella Twins, which, you know, your mileage may vary, but they were there at the beginning of the Women's Evolution. They were there, you know, they were part of it. Nikki certainly improved over the course, but they were huge stars. And both of them were former champions, whether you like that they were former champions or not. Nia Jax is on the top row. Nia Jax is also a former champion. We can quibble about whether or not she's unsafe in the ring or whatever, a former champion. Another person in the top row, Beth Phoenix, a fucking Hall of Famer and a former champion. Accompanying them on the top row is Lacey Evans, who has won exactly fucking nothing. But she represents the Women's Evolution better than, say, oh, I don't know, Naomi? Was Naomi's render unavailable? She's a two-time champion. If not Naomi, you don't want to use Naomi? Fine. How about Shayna Baszler, who was the NXT champion for fucking ever? But this was when they released this image. This was back when everybody thought that Vince hated her and didn't want to put her on TV. Then a few days later, she was on TV in a huge new angle. So maybe not. Can't put her on there. How about Rhea Ripley, former champion, young, tall, blonde, former champion, the future. No, the future, because we fucking say it is Lacey Evans. You didn't have to put any of those people that I mentioned on there, but you can't put fucking Lacey Evans. Nope. Not has done fucking nothing Lacey Evans on a picture of the most important women in the women's evolution. Can't do it. Can't do it because it's easy to see through. It's easy to see your biases. And then you allow people like me to call you out for it. What if you had used anybody that I had mentioned before, I couldn't say shit. But you use Lacey Evans, who again has won exactly fucking nothing. And you put her on the same level as a future, as so many future Hall of Famers, a current Hall of Famer, and a bunch of former champions. Now you can say, as they make sure to do during every one of her matches, she's got the makings of a future champion, and she very well may be, because you decide these things, a future champion. But she sure as hell ain't a current or former champion, so putting her on that shit just looks bad. Naomi does deserve better. The pop she received when she returned at the Royal Rumble was immense. The video of her return had millions of views. You deny it for some reason. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So I'm assuming the story of this feud is Naomi eventually wins the feud, because characters like Lacey Evans shouldn't win feuds against characters like Naomi, if you know what I mean. Especially given the current climate, maybe you don't book the racist white lady gimmick to go over the proud black lady gimmick. Not that Naomi is a gimmick, because Naomi's not a gimmick. Naomi's real. Lacey. I don't know how much of Lacey Evans is real. But the gimmick is fucking shit, I'll tell you that. Anyway, Jeff Hardy gets beat up by Sheamus during an interview. Can't wait for Sheamus to pour some fucking liquor in his throat on Sunday. That's going to be great. Kayla asks Sasha and Bayley, what's going to happen on Sunday. And surprise, surprise, Bayley and Sasha think they're going to win. They're really good at all of this, but it's a stupid trope. What's going to happen at Extreme Rules? Well, you know, I think I'm going to lose. Says nobody ever. So let's stop asking these questions. Nikki and Alexa are watching Bayley and Sasha on a monitor. Bayley has just said that Nikki Cross should go back to England and be a chimney sweep, which is delightfully stupid. But Nikki Cross is doubting herself, and Alexa Bliss is talking her up, and then she looks over, Nikki Cross does, sees Bayley there, and just runs up and attacks her from behind. Now, yes, Bayley was saying mean things in her backstage interview about Nikki Cross. But is that how we want to teach our kids how to solve problems? I heard you were saying mean things about me. I'm going to run up and punch you in the back of the head. If that happens at school, you know, since they're going to reopen schools now everywhere. If that happened at school and your kid ran up and punched somebody in the back of the head that they heard was saying mean things about him, guess who gets sent to the principal's office? Your kid. So maybe we don't present that as a as an honorable way of settling disputes. I know Vince thinks it is, but maybe diplomacy. Perhaps. AJ Styles versus Matt Riddle. It's a great match. It's a great match. These two were made for each other. And I really wish that I could root for Matt Riddle right now. But as I said, it just doesn't feel right anymore to root for him. Which is too bad because he's got a lot of really great instincts in the ring and also comedy-wise. Like, I love the moment where AJ Styles gets pissed and rolls out of the ring and just starts slamming his hands on the announce desk. And so Riddle goes out there and copycats him just to piss him off. I thought that was fun. These guys worked really, really well together. Had a lot of counters for counters and stuff like that. It was great. Styles gets Riddle in the calf crusher. Riddle gets out of it and goes for the bro mission. Styles counters that into a roll up, wins. And they have a good little moment there where they're about to shake hands and actually do shake hands. AJ Styles has respect for Riddle. They're really pushing this whole thing about how everybody on the main roster really respects Matt Riddle. Okay, I wish I could still respect Matt Riddle, but I guess I can't. Yeah. But then, during the middle of the handshake, Baron Corbin shows up. Remember how I told you we were supposed to remember that he existed? Well, this is why we were supposed to remember he existed. He shows up and punches Matt Riddle in the back of the head. Now, remind me again of why we're supposed to like Nikki Cross, who runs up and punches Bayley in the back of the head. But we're supposed to like that, but we're not supposed to like when Baron runs up and punches Matt Riddle in the back of the head. The same act, just like it's the different provocations, I suppose. I mean, Matt Riddle beat up Baron Corbin a few weeks ago. Bayley won a match by cheating and said some mean things. I mean, really, you're allowed to feel one way about both things. You're not allowed to feel two ways about the things. Like one way about this one and another way about that one. You got to be consistent. That's all I'm saying. So yeah, hey, Baron Corbin beats up Matt Riddle and then gives him the end of days. And AJ Styles thinks about like whether or not he respects Matt Riddle enough to get involved. And he's like, oh, no, I better not. And he goes away. And then Matt Riddle takes an end of days from Baron Corbin. And that's the end of the show. So let's all get ready for six more months of Baron Corbin versus Matt Riddle matches. The first one's probably going to be really good. Maybe one of the next 12 will be good too. But the rest of them won't be very good. Let's talk about Extreme Rules. Excuse me. God, I feel so bad. I didn't use the actual branded terminology.
The Horror Show
at Extreme Rules. Okay, let's figure out what the hell. What's this card? Pardon me while I Google. All right. So I don't know. We're not allowed to know what the WWE Championship match McIntyre versus Ziggler is going to be. There's talk on the webs that it's going to be a tables, ladders, and chairs match. Okay, great. Yay. Good. Can Drew win whatever it is, whatever stipulation it is? Can Drew just win it in 5 minutes? Because I so don't care. Drew's winning this thing. Like Dolph, there's no way Dolph is winning this thing. It's an insult to have this match. If you gotta wait for Randy Orton to punt Big Show into retirement before Randy and Drew can have their title program. If you got to wait for it to happen at SummerSlam, fine. But it's an insult to all of us to make Drew beat up Dolph Ziggler while we wait. Raw Women's Championship, Asuka versus Sasha. A Sashka match. Asuka, I think. I'd be much more surprised to find Sasha and Bayley both having titles than neither of them having titles at the end of it. As we said earlier, the way that they've booked Nikki Cross versus Bayley, if Nikki doesn't win on Sunday, like, it's not a burial exactly, but good Lord. It's got to lead to something. It's got to lead to her changing her character or being a different person, especially if Bayley cheats to win again. But because, you know what, I don't have faith in WWE to tell the story right. I don't. So I think Bayley wins too. I think Sasha, I honestly don't know what they're planning for Sasha versus Bayley. I don't know how they're planning on breaking them up. If they're planning on breaking them up, whatever. I just don't know. So I'm going to say Bayley wins because I don't think WWE. They love telling you to root for somebody and booking it so they have to win, right? Don't they have to win? Like the way you're telling the story, they have to win, right? And they don't win. They love doing that. So sorry, Nikki Cross. Wyatt Swamp Fight. This is the whole thing about like Braun Strowman, his coke addiction, notwithstanding, in all seriousness, it does appear that he's got to go to a specially evil place. He doesn't want the Fiend to show up. He yelled into the microphone,
I don't want the Fiend to show up because then he'll kill me.
This is all building to the Fiend versus Braun Strowman at SummerSlam. So I think Bray Wyatt, I think the match doesn't end conclusively or whatever, which allows for the Fiend versus Braun at SummerSlam. Because remember, we only got regular Bray Wyatt at Money in the Bank, and now we're getting Swamp Billy Bray Wyatt at the Swamp Fight at the Horror Show at Extreme Rules. So hey, it's the eye for an eye match. Hey, it's the eye for an eye match. You know what? It doesn't matter. You know why? Because nobody's actually getting an eye pulled out of their head. Not actually. Not really. So I guess here's my prediction. If Seth Rollins loses and gets an eye pulled out of his head, he will wear an eye patch for exactly 5 weeks. And then he will have had mysterious surgery to replace the eye or something. Because nothing fucking matters. It would not shock me to have his eye pulled out on Sunday and him show up on Monday like nothing's wrong. Apollo Crews versus MVP. Apollo Crews is winning this so that Bobby Lashley can beat Apollo Crews at SummerSlam. SmackDown tag title match. I'm going to say Cesaro and Nakamura. Because then it allows Xavier Woods to come back from injury, and he'll be part of the team that wins the titles back. And that'll be it. And that's all the matches? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Is that really all the matches we have? Wow. 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 God. That's it, guys. I cannot fathom. The only thing I might check out live, because I might want to be on Twitter to tweet about how shitty it is as it happens, is the Eye for an Eye match. Maybe the Swamp Fight, because that's also going to be pretty crazy. Nothing else, honestly, interests me in the least. In the least. Asuka versus Sasha is going to be great, but again, I feel like I've seen it a half a dozen times. Stop having your people fight each other before they fight each other. Anyway, that was SmackDown. That is going to be
the Horror Show
at Extreme Rules. I have been Alex Pulowski. I will be Alex Pulowski when I come back to talk about
the Horror Show at Extreme Rules.
I did that all wrong. I'm not going to go back and do it again. Yeah, I probably won't do a show just about the Eye for an Eye match. But I also might do a show just about the Eye for an Eye match. I don't know. Let's find out together. Everybody be safe out there. Wear a mask, for God's sake. I can't believe that those are the only matches on Extreme Rules. That's gonna suck. Everything sucks.